Monday morning you showed the fight. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Boy, do we have a show for you today. It was a really exciting week five in the NFL season. We no longer have any undefeated teams in the league. All 32 teams have at least one loss, although not all 32 teams have at least one win. But Don Shula, and I'm sure he is doing this probably as you listen to this podcast, along with Larry Zonka and all of his other Miami Dolphin buddies from 1972, Bob Greasy, who else was in there? Jake Scott, Manny Fernandez, all those great guys from that Dolphins team are celebrating because there are no undefeated teams left in the league. But that wasn't the only exciting thing that we had going on in the league so far in week five. What I thought personally, one of the most exciting things of week five, the DraftKings contest to win $1 million playing fantasy football just for 1 week. You draft a team for week five, and based on the players that you pick, you get a point value just like in any fantasy football league. And the winner among 92,000 contestants was awarded $1 million. Now, why do I bring this up? Even though the contest is pretty much over, we have the Monday night game left as of this recording, but the contest pretty much over. Well, I'm bringing it up because DraftKings is offering it again this coming weekend for week six. Now, DraftKings, as you may know, maybe you don't, they are a partner with FF Champs, which is a sister site of Football Nation. So we definitely recommend you signing up for DraftKings and competing in the $1 million contest that'll be week six. I competed in week five, didn't do as well as I would have liked, didn't get the $1 million, so I'm still a working man here talking football with you. But I don't yet know if I am feeling lucky in week six, was feeling lucky in week five and didn't get the million, didn't get any prize, actually. Top 20% of the contestants win a prize of some kind. So you don't have to just get the $1 million and finish in first to win something. You can get your money back or even a bigger prize than your money back to play if you finish in the top 15,000 contestants, roughly, give or take a couple hundred. But that is what we're going to concentrate the beginning of our show on. Is actually the week six contest of DraftKings. Later on in the show, we will get to breaking down Sunday Night Football. That matchup, I thought it'd be a blowout. The wrong team won, though. Are we actually seeing a changing of the guard in the AFC East? We'll discuss that in our second segment. And then our fourth and long segment, we're talking Jim Harbaugh out in San Francisco and more reaction to the possibility of him not being with the team next season. The Vikings offense up and down this season stalls in Green Bay on Thursday night. And Geno Smith, many people will say finally Geno Smith is benched on Sunday against the Chargers. Did not play in the second half. Michael Vick played. We'll talk about what the Jets' plans under center are going forward. But let's start with a DraftKings contest. What I want to begin with is the winning lineup for week five. So it's always, you know, the NFL, a copycat league. I'd say DraftKings and fantasy football is the same. You want to copy what went well for the winner the week prior. Now, not always are those players that won you the previous week going to again repeat that performance, but it's good to know maybe where they placed their money or what positions did they emphasize in their draft, and maybe even perhaps what players are doing really well right now, what players are hot going into week six. The quarterback of the winning lineup for the $1 million contest on DraftKings, you guessed it, Peyton Manning. 35.96 fantasy points set a new career high with 479 passing yards. That's pretty amazing for a guy that, what, has like 85 or 86? What was that stat on Sunday they put up? 85, I think it was, 300-yard passing games in his career. Went for 479 yards against the Cardinals. Pretty good defense, too. It's just incredible the numbers he was able to put up. Did get picked off twice, but kind of a moot point with him throwing for that many yards and three touchdowns. Arian Foster and Ben Tate were the two starting running backs on the winning roster. Foster, 34.2 fantasy points. We're going to talk about him a little bit later when we discuss the Texans-Cowboys game. And Ben Tate was a big surprise. He was kind of a flyer in this lineup, I would say. 16.1 fantasy points. He was coming off of an injury, was a value pickup in this lineup, and he really surprised. Wasn't a shared backfield for Cleveland on Sunday. Tate got a majority of the carries, which was a surprise. The receivers, two Broncos, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. Thomas was out of his mind on Sunday. 45.6 fantasy points, including the bonuses of going over 200 yards and two touchdowns. Emmanuel Sanders, a great play in PPR, 20.9 points. Golden Tate was his other receiver who had a big game in the absence of Calvin Johnson. Tate, 29.4 fantasy points. At tight end, Antonio Gates caught two more touchdowns from Phillip Rivers, who had a big day against the Jets. Gates, 22 fantasy points. Terrence Williams was his flex play, 15.1 fantasy points, actually his low point on his team this week. But Williams was a good play, as well as Romo kind of had a breakout game passing-wise against the Texans. And the San Diego Chargers were his defense, 16 points as they shut out the New York Jets. A great defensive play. They really weren't that expensive either against the New York Jets. So that's a total of 235.26 fantasy points to win the $1 million. That's kind of the neighborhood that you got to be in. I was in probably about 100 points behind that, actually. And there are just thousands of people in between me and the winner. So you really got to go for the splash plays if you're going to play this, and go for the million, which when we get into discussing the strategies of this, there are really two different ways I think you can approach it. Is the safe picks, where you can almost guarantee yourself to get into the top 20%, or you go for some big flash plays, maybe some risky plays that other people aren't going to go for, but that will get you the $1 million if it pans out. In this case, you know, this guy went for Ben Tate. He went for Terrence Williams. Those are guys, maybe even Golden Tate you could also count. Those three guys are players that a majority of lineups in this contest are not going to have. And if they score big, especially if they all score big, you're going to have a good chance of winning the $1 million. So a little bit of background. If you don't know about the contest, you have $50,000 in salary to fill 9 starting spots: a quarterback, 2 running backs, 3 wide receivers, a tight end, a flex position, and a defense. No kicker. Those 9 spots, fill it with $50,000. Each player is allotted a certain salary for that week. And those 9 players' salaries that you choose have to fall under $50,000. Remember, you got to check the scoring system of this. It's basic settings with PPR. That's really the basics that you got to remember when drafting your team. It is PPR. But don't make the mistake of not knowing the bonuses or not knowing it is PPR or something like that. You have to. That's rule number one when playing fantasy sports, not just fantasy football, any kind of fantasy sport. You have to know your scoring system. So look that up before you draft your team. Let's get into position by position what I'd recommend of possible draft picks for week 6. Again, I wouldn't call myself an expert at daily fantasy. I am much stronger, I would say, at the league fantasy. I have more experience in that, at least. But getting a hang of the daily fantasy, and take my advice with a grain of salt. And of course, check back with Bill Enright, who's a great daily fantasy player, Todd DeFries, and others at Football Nation. This is something, my advice is something that you can supplement other people's advice on Football Nation. I recommend you checking out all the advice. There is such a thing as too much information, but when you're starting out, I don't think there really is too much information until you become real comfortable with your decisions. There is no such thing. Once again, Peyton Manning, as expected, the most expensive player in week six, $9,400 to buy him. So that's quite a fee. If you can afford him, though, he's worth it. Actually, I think I misspoke before. I said three passing touchdowns this past week. He had four along with the 479 passing yards. He joined the 500 touchdown club. Him and Brett Favre. That's it in the 500 passing touchdown club. I like Peyton Manning if you can afford him. Other quarterbacks that if you can afford are great plays. Matt Ryan at home against the Chicago Bears. Ryan, his performance at home is drastically better than his performance on the road. Matt Ryan comes in as $8,600. He's the second most expensive quarterback. Unfortunately, this week it seems like the quarterbacks are the good quarterbacks anyway are very expensive. There were a few quarterbacks in week five you could have gotten for a decent price, under $8,000, maybe even under $7,000. But most of the great quarterbacks are going to be more than $7,000, even more than $8,000. So Matt Ryan at home, 78%. Completion percentage, 734 yards, and six touchdowns with no picks in two home games. I like that against the beat-up Bears defense. Phillip Rivers, $8,200. He is the fourth most expensive quarterback this week, but he has been on fire after that week one loss against Arizona. He's on the road against the Raiders, so it's a little bit tougher being on the road for him, but he's just been Mr. Consistent since week two. At least 250 passing yards in each game, at least two touchdowns, and in three of the games since week two, he has three passing touchdowns, just one interception in all of those games combined. If you're looking for some value at the quarterback position and want to go a little bit cheaper, I recommend Blake Broyles. He comes in $5,700. He will be playing the Tennessee Titans on the road next week. Broyles really struggled against the Steelers. I wouldn't say really struggled. He had some nice throws and some nice completions. He did throw two interceptions on deeper passes. But at that price, I think he provides some value because of the Titans' defense. Allowed 292 yards and three touchdowns to Brian Hoyer in week five. Running backs. My two guys I'm targeting in my draft, Frank Gore and Andre Ellington. The 49ers the last 2 weeks have really rededicated themselves to the running game. Gore went off for 107 yards against the Kansas City Chiefs. I expect him to get a touchdown against the Rams in week six. Andre Ellington struggled to run the ball against the tough Broncos defense, at least the tough Broncos D against the run. But he scored on the run, rushing the ball, and then had four catches for 112 yards and another touchdown through the air. So that is another quality value play. Both those guys are really value plays. Frank Gore is just $4,800 in week six, and Andre Ellington just $5,100. Another guy that I'm targeting, somebody that was on the winning roster this past week, Ben Tate, just $5,500, and he rushed for over 6 yards per carry against the Steelers in week one. The Steelers will be visiting the Browns in week six. A guy that is kind of my really cheap pickup at running back, and I'm thinking about using him in my flex, Anton Smith. Now, he is the perfect example of what I was talking about before. If you want to go for the $1 million, you got to go for some risky big play potential, high ceiling guys, but big risk. Anton Smith is that guy. He has three touchdowns in the last 3 weeks, a touchdown per game, and all those touchdowns are at least 38 yards. He had a 74-yard touchdown catch against the Giants in week 5. So he's a big play guy. He doesn't get a lot of volume of touches. His carries or touches are not going to go up at all, but with that type of dynamic speed and playmaking ability, he has a chance, especially at home against the Bears on the fast turf of the Georgia Dome, to score from anywhere on the field. He is a guy I'm targeting in my flex. He is just $3,800. Excuse me, $3,400, so even cheaper than that. Wide receiver. I'm changing my strategy this week. I had Giovanni Bernard and DeMarco Murray as my running backs. I went stud for my two running back spots. I thought about it after I didn't do so well on Sunday, and it's a PPR league. Perhaps targeting big stud wide receivers, especially because there are three wide receiver spots, is a better way to go. That's why I went with the value picks in Frank Gore, Ben Tate, Andre Ellington, and then a flyer in Anton Smith. At wide receiver, I'm going big. Demaryius Thomas and Antonio Brown. I don't need to tell you guys why you should pick up Demaryius Thomas and Antonio Brown. Thomas will cost you $8,000, Brown $7,900. So they're pretty steep, but they're worth it. Thomas, I expect to have another big day against the Jets next week. He had 8 catches, 226 yards, and 2 touchdowns, as I mentioned before. Could have gone for a third one, but it was called back for a penalty. Also, a strategy I think is worth looking into for this game, you want to have the bonus of a quarterback wide receiver hookup. I tried having Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger in week 5. Against the Jaguars, that looked good on paper. Didn't pan out. So I'm going even bigger in week 6 with Peyton Manning, Demaryius Thomas. Huge hookup in week 5 against a pretty good Cardinals team. They're on the road against the Jets, but the Jets have been horrible at stopping quarterbacks and wide receivers from accumulating fantasy points. They haven't done all that bad yardage-wise through the air, but fantasy points-wise, they are fourth. They give up the fourth most fantasy points to quarterbacks this year and the third most to wide receivers. That's why I'm going with Thomas and Peyton Manning. Antonio Brown, the last 21 games for him, he has at least 5 catches. Yeah, at least 5 catches. And hopefully, I think he will get back into the end zone against the Browns, which he did in week 1. With so much money dedicated to Brown and Thomas and Peyton Manning, I had to find value for my third wide receiver. I'm looking at Reuben Randall at $4,600 or Malcolm Floyd. Randall is playing against a weak Philadelphia Eagles defense. Eli Manning has been doing a lot better the last 3 weeks. I have confidence with him. Or Malcolm Floyd, who has really become a pretty good fantasy start. With Rivers doing so well, they're playing the Raiders on the road. At tight end, Greg Olsen, Martellus Bennett are my two favorite guys, if you can afford them. Heath Miller is another value pick that has really turned it around the last couple of weeks. But I'm going with Zach Miller. He gives me great value at $3,000. I mentioned the Jets and how bad they are at giving up fantasy points to the opposition's quarterback and wide receiver. The Cowboys give up the most tight end fantasy points in the league. They gave up a ton of points to Delanie Walker and Jared Cook, even though the Cowboys ended up winning those games. So I like Miller because he's a guy that is cheap. He's likely not going to be in many lineups, and he has a pretty good matchup, a great matchup actually, against the Cowboys and their tight end defense. As I mentioned before, in my flex, I have Anton Smith. He's my big, flashy player. Other guys I was considering in that spot, I mentioned Ben Tate already, and Brandon Oliver. He actually had the most fantasy points among running backs in week 5. 19 carries, 114 yards, 4 catches for 68 more yards, and 2 touchdowns. Who is Brandon Oliver? He is now the new starting running back for the San Diego Chargers because they've lost Danny Woodhead. Ryan Matthews, and Donald Brown. So Oliver has been effective. At least he was effective against the Jets, who are a tough run defense. They have a stout front seven. So I'd have confidence in starting Oliver in week six. And then finally, defense, going with the Chargers. Again, they're on the road against the Raiders. A little bit tougher because it's on the road and against a division opponent. You never know what can happen in a division game. But the San Diego defense has been really hot lately. They're coming off a shutout. I like their chances against the Raiders, who just fired their head coach. So we all hope that you will sign up for DraftKings Week 6 Million Dollar Contest. You can sign up through ffchamps.com. Go to ffchamps.com/million. You can also find a link in the embedded article page that this podcast is in. We got to take our first break. We'll come back with our normal programming, as they say, and break down Sunday Night Football with the Patriots dominating the Cincinnati Bengals. Boy, I would have loved to have been in the state of Mississippi this past Saturday. I only bring up Mississippi because it was just mentioned in the song. But man, Old Miss and Mississippi State getting huge victories in college football over Texas A&M and Alabama. But anyway, this isn't a college football show, but I've been to Mississippi once, just drove through it, and there was nothing, pretty much nothing there. It was nothing. And I'd imagine they all had a great time on Saturday night. But anyway, we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Send me a tweet. Let me know what you think about the show. DMHOLCOMB is my handle. You can follow me there. I tweet about really all kinds of sports, but a lot about football. Tweet out my stories as well at that handle. Follow me on Facebook at Dave's Football News or email me, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Let's get into Sunday Night Football. Patriots dominating the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, one thing I dislike about our show is it's Monday morning and we don't get to talk Monday Night Football, which is, I mean, I guess Monday Night Football is kind of overblown because it's on ESPN. It's overhyped, in my opinion. But we never get to talk about previous Monday Night Football games because of when this show is scheduled. So we don't get to break down the Patriots debacle in Kansas City. And I thought that was such a big story that we would at least discuss it, especially because the Patriots were again in prime time. Well, I thought we would be criticizing New England for, 10 minutes on the show. I got to praise them after the performance that they had on Sunday night. You know, I will say we can't go too far in criticizing a team after one game or get too high on them after a big win. But you kind of expected this, you know? New England wasn't going to have two stinkers in a row. I think that was Chris Collinsworth's words. At Bill Belichick, Tom Brady weren't going to be embarrassed twice on national TV. It just wasn't going to happen. I still have a lot of questions about this team. One thing I was going to concentrate on before Brady and Belichick and the Patriots flipped the script on Sunday night was the lack of playmakers on offense and even the lack of offensive line, which is what has really led to Tom Brady's struggles. I know that he's struggling to build a rapport with his receivers, and he has had some bad throws as well. He's got to be accountable for himself. But there's no Randy, he hasn't had a deep, true deep threat since Randy Moss left 4 years ago. You know, Chad Johnson, that signing didn't work out. Danny Amendola has been a bust. They let Wes Welker leave. They spent a second-round pick on a backup quarterback. I mean, the writing has kind of been on the wall that Brady is kind of almost being pushed out. That's kind of what it's been looking like, at least in the last week. That's what people have said it looks like. But that was obviously premature, as Brady proved and Belichick proved that this team is still someone to be reckoned with, especially in the AFC. So Brady and Belichick were just brilliant on Sunday night against the Bengals, a team that's supposed to be one of the best in the conference. The Patriots returned to the power run game, and that was very effective. Ridley, 27 carries, 113 yards, and a touchdown. Shane Vereen added 90 yards on the ground on 9 carries, 18 more yards through the air. Brady finished 23 of 35, 292 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The scary thing, I think it's scary, for the rest of that AFC East and maybe even the rest of the conference, is Brady is finally getting on the same page with those tight ends. He just was so dominant. The Patriots were dominant with a healthy Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. They traded Logan Mankins, which was, it still is, a hugely criticized move because of the play of the offensive line. But if Tim Wright can actually play well and that offensive line can play somewhat decent, Wright is a great pickup for this team. Because with a healthy Gronkowski, and he's getting healthy, Tim Wright and Gronkowski can be a 1-2 punch that is the best in the league. Gronkowski, 6 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown on Sunday night. Wright, 5 catches, 85 yards, and a score. Brady, not yet on the same page with his receivers. Julian Edelman, Brandon LaFell, Aaron Dobson didn't have big numbers on Sunday. But if you get Vereen and Ridley established, and then you're throwing to Gronkowski and Wright in the middle of the field, stuff on the outside and deep is going to open up for Edelman and other receivers. It's only a matter of time. The Patriots, if they can establish that running game like they did against a tough Bengals defense and get the tight ends involved, everything else is going to fall into place. As the Cincinnati Bengals, though, this is a huge disappointment for them. This segment was supposed to be about how much the Patriots have fallen from the sky. You know, the sky is falling in on them, and they're no longer an elite team in the league. Now, instead, it's about the Bengals, and again, the issues that they have playing in big games, especially on the road. I've been hesitant myself to call Andy Dalton a true franchise quarterback. And I've been hesitant to call the Bengals a real contender in the AFC. But watching their first 3 games, and if you follow my power rankings, I had them ranked in the top 5 after their first win. And each win after that, they have been more impressive. But they're playing weaker opponents at home. This was a tough opponent that's angry off of a loss, and it's on the road. And the Bengals just didn't show up. Although this division is far from over, I would still say the Bengals are the true favorite in the AFC North. That being said, it just baffles me how poorly they can play on a night where they really could have established themselves as the second best team in the conference. And I would have put them in front of San Diego, right behind Denver, even though the Chargers are technically in first place in the AFC West. That's how highly regarded I had the Bengals. And I am someone that's been hesitant to call them a contender. That's how talented this team is and how much potential the Bengals have. But they cannot do that. They will not earn the respect of everyone and have everyone around the league saying the same things that I'm saying, that they're a top 5 team, a top 2 team in the AFC, until they beat opponents on the road and they win games at night and win playoff games. Win games at night, meaning in prime time and big games against quality opponents. Getting to a little bit more into the X's and O's for the Bengals, one thing that I noticed right off the bat, and the fellow division opponent the Bengals have coming up in December, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, are going through the same thing. I didn't understand Hugh Jackson's play calling, especially on the first drive. You know, the New England defense gave up 207 rushing yards to the Chiefs last week. I would think the Bengals, who are a heavy running team, would feature Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. In the first half, those two guys combined for 12 touches. I don't understand that. Yes, the Patriots jumped out to a 14-0 lead, so the stats maybe are a little bit skewed because the Patriots or the Bengals had to come back and were passing a lot. But still, why are your two best players not involved? Of course, Hill's not one of their best two players, but you get my point. The Bengals' offense is centered around their running game. And they weren't able to establish a running game against a team that was coming off a game that where they gave up over 200 yards on the ground. The weird thing about this Sunday night game is Andy Dalton didn't play all that badly. In other night games or playoff games or road games, Dalton has played horribly. But it was three Bengal fumbles by other players that led to the lopsided score. Dalton was 15 of 24, 204 yards, and threw two touchdowns. I will say that something that doesn't come up in the stat sheet, Dalton missed a couple of throws. One in particular to Bernard, had a shot to hit him on a wheel route, would have been a touchdown. It was a third down play on the second drive of the game for the Bengals. Up the sideline, if he hits Bernard there, he likely goes for a 50-yard touchdown. I win my fantasy game, by the way. And the score is 14-7. Completely different game than 14-0 and ultimately 20-3 at halftime. Again, my takeaway points about the Bengals. I have doubts about them playing on the road and in big games in prime time. But even maybe even more importantly, this game proved they are going to struggle to come back in games. They are a heavy run team, and I like that about them. They like to run the ball and play defense. But similar to what Carolina is going through, although I think their identity is they have an identity crisis without any running backs, when the Bengals fall behind, it's hard for them to come back. Because they get so much offense from their running game. They are not designed to score 40 points on the road against the Patriots. It's not going to happen. At least not passing the ball. If they get some interceptions, turnovers, and Bernard and Hill are working well, maybe. But when you're down 20-3 and Andy Dalton has to throw, they're not going to score 40 points. They're not going to come back and win a game like that. All right, let's go to other matchups around the league. We don't have a ton of time to get into any game in depth, but I want to mention other big storylines that I found interesting from Week 5. We saw a battle for the state of Texas. Bragging rights in that state with the Dallas Cowboys beating the Houston Texans in overtime. It was a fantastic game. Flashback to the old days. Running the ball. DeMarco Murray has been outstanding for this team. He joins Jim Brown and O.J. Simpson as the only other two guys. Those two and Murray are the only three running backs to start a season with five straight 100-yard rushing days. Murray had 31 carries, 136 yards, and then five more touches in the air catching the ball and totaled 192 yards. So he had 36 touches for 192 yards. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Hopefully he can stay healthy because he's just on pace for a record like 450 touches or something ridiculous. But he's been the most productive back in the league. So you can't argue with what the Cowboys are doing. They're 4-1. Arian Foster, 23 carries, 157 yards for him. Two touchdowns, so he found pay dirt twice. Murray didn't get in the end zone on Sunday. The Cowboys actually missed a field goal that would have won it at the end of regulation, but Dan Bailey came back, hit the game-winning field goal in overtime. Tony Romo, by the way, was 28 of 41, 324 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. He did have that pick, but Romo's so much more effective when he has a great running game. And there's a lot better blocking as well with that offensive line, which has been a huge part of the successful Cowboys running attack. The Indianapolis Colts defeated the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday. This is more of a classic matchup when they play in Baltimore because of the history of the Baltimore Colts, but it was still a pretty exciting matchup coming in. We were expecting a lot of offense. Didn't get a ton of offense, only 33 points scored in this game. Really sloppy football. The two teams combined for 7 turnovers. We were hoping it would be a high-scoring affair. Didn't turn out. Andrew Luck finished 32 of 49, 312 yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions. He was really the big stat guy in the game. Nobody else had notable fantasy stats. The upset of the day, Buffalo Bills defeating the Detroit Lions. Kyle Orton winning his first game with the Buffalo Bills. He threw 43 times, completed 30 of those passes for 308 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Fred Jackson carried this team, 10 rushes for 49 yards, 7 catches for 58 yards. The Lions offense really struggled with no Calvin Johnson, no Reggie Bush. They both left with injuries. The Lions scored 14 points by the 13:44 mark of the second quarter. Didn't score again in this game. Didn't help that their new field goal kicker, Alex Henry, missed 3 attempts, all 3 of his attempts. The Eagle fans out there listening are just laughing. So, Lions are already on their second field goal kicker, probably will get a third one for next week. Already mentioned Peyton Manning and his record-setting day, over 500 touchdown passes now in his career and 470 passing yards against the Cardinals as they won 41-20. Two other players returned to play against former teams. Greg Olsen getting the better of the Chicago Bears. Chicago traded him in 2011. Said this week that that was a huge mistake. Well, Olsen proved that on Sunday. Scored 2 touchdowns as he led the Carolina comeback. The Panthers won 31-24. And in San Francisco, Alex Smith facing his former team, the 49ers, and Colin Kaepernick, the man who replaced him in their Super Bowl campaign in 2012. It's reminiscent of the Joe Montana-Steve Young matchup that fans saw in 1994. Smith and Kaepernick not quite at the level Montana and Young are at, but the irony in it was Smith plays for the Chiefs. The Montana faced Young when he was on the Kansas City Chiefs, so that was definitely a reminder of that matchup. Kaepernick and the 49ers won this time. Montana won the game back in 1994. Like I mentioned before, the 49ers returning to their ground game, returning to their roots the last 2 weeks to beat the Eagles and to beat the Chiefs. Alex Smith ended up throwing an interception to end the game. That wraps up our second segment, but we're going to stay with the San Francisco 49ers as we head to our fourth and long segment, talking about Alex Smith and his departure with the 49ers 2 years ago. That has led to some tension in the locker room between Jim Harbaugh and the players. And Fox Sports' Jay Glazer reports on Sunday that Harbaugh will be out of San Francisco by the end of the year, no matter what. Even if a Lombardi Trophy comes back to the Bay Area, Harbaugh is out of San Francisco. That and more in our fourth and long segment coming up. Come to decide that the things that I tried were in my life just to get high on. When I sit alone, come get a little known, but I need more. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear from you guys. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com, or find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. Getting into our fourth and long segment, we're going to get moving here quickly. We want to get you in and out of here in about 45 to 50 minutes. So, as I mentioned before the break, Fox Sports' Jay Glazer reports Jim Harbaugh will be out of San Francisco even if the 49ers win Super Bowl 49. This report resurfaced the week Harbaugh was playing the Chiefs and Alex Smith. I believe it resurfaced at this point because Harbaugh apparently, after his first season where Smith led the team to an NFC championship, losing to the Giants, Harbaugh flew down to North Carolina to work out with then-free agent Peyton Manning and tried to lure him to come play in San Francisco. Now, according to this report that came out, Alex Smith apparently asked Harbaugh about this situation, and he didn't get a straight answer. So Glazer reports it was at that point that players kind of knew or believed that they could not trust Jim Harbaugh. So my statement, Harbaugh is in his last season in San Francisco. I'm grunting here. It is amazing to think about because this guy has been to three straight NFC championships. I mean, everybody knows his record. Only George Seifert, who took over a Super Bowl winning team in 1989. The 49ers won the Super Bowl in 88 and then won it again in 89 with Seifert. Seifert is the only guy that has won more games in his first 3 years with the 49ers. But not even Seifert went to three straight NFC championships to start his head coach tenure. This isn't about winning. This situation with Harbaugh possibly leaving is not about winning. It's about egos. And it really reminds me of the Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson fiasco, if you will, about 20 years ago that helped San Francisco win that Super Bowl in 94 with George Seifert, the year Young and Montana faced off. It is also mostly about Harbaugh's ego, which seems to have worn off or worn out his players and likely the management in San Francisco. During the telecast on Sunday, Phil Simms made a comment about how players aren't supposed to like their coach. He's the man in charge. He has to make tough decisions for the better of the team, not the individual. You know, that was probably the smartest thing Simms said on Sunday, because I agree with him. However, it is a completely different story if management has a problem with you. And that appears to be the case. These stories continuing to resurface, I don't believe they would continue to resurface if it was only the players that had an issue. Players want to win. Players want to play. You know, players want to win Super Bowls and look good doing it. Harbaugh has been known to be a player's coach. Sure, he's probably tough on guys. But you don't think Alex Smith loved him during his first year when Harbaugh completely turned around his career? To me, it's not just the players that are turning on Harbaugh. I think it's mostly management, actually, that's turning on Harbaugh. That was the case in the Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson decision, situation. And that, to me, is going to lead to the demise of Harbaugh. And for people that say, well, a Super Bowl would make everything okay, that would make everything right. Jimmy Johnson left the year after winning a Super Bowl. He left the year after winning two straight Super Bowls. So don't think for one second that a Super Bowl will save this situation. To Thursday Night Football, where, again, we're blessed with listening to Phil Simms in what has been now the third straight blowout on Thursday Night Football. The three worst blowouts in the history of Thursday Night Football have happened in the last 3 weeks. But anyway, the Minnesota Vikings on the wrong end of the blowout last Thursday are having real issues with their offense. And my statement, the biggest problem with the Minnesota offense is the injuries that they have on that side of the ball. I'm punting that away. Yes, the suspension to Adrian Peterson, two quarterbacks are hurt. Teddy Bridgewater wasn't able to play, who really should be the starter going forward. Kyle Rudolph isn't in there. Those are that. Yes, that's all an issue. But that was somewhat solved against the Falcons in week four. You know, Teddy Bridgewater did play, but even when Bridgewater didn't finish that game, the Vikings were able to beat the Falcons at home. The offense's bigger problem is their inability to get the ball into their playmakers' hands, which I'm hugely surprised that Norv Turner isn't able to do. Cordarrelle Patterson should get the ball so much more than he is right now. He is clearly the best player on this offense, especially without Adrian Peterson on the field. He touched the ball two times on Thursday Night Football. He has 15 catches in five games. That's it for 189 yards. Get the ball in his hands. I don't care how you do it. If you throw wide receiver screens, if you throw it to him down the field, if you call his number on end arounds, reverses, whatever it takes, get him the ball. He had 102 yards rushing in week one, which was great. But since then, he's only had one carry. So it's not even like they're trying to get him the ball in the running game and it's just not working in the passing game. Even if you look at his running stats, since week one, he hasn't produced at all. I don't understand why. Get him the ball. Jerick McKinnon and Jairus Wright are two other guys that need to be fed the ball as well in that offense. But the huge story is Patterson not getting the ball. Huge story. Get him the ball. It would help my fantasy team too, but it really would help the Vikings offense. And I expect with Teddy Bridgewater back that Norv Turner will focus more on getting Patterson that rock. Lastly, in our fourth and long segment, Jets quarterback Geno Smith was benched on Sunday in the second half against the Chargers. The Jets were shut out 31-0 in the game. Smith finished 4 of 12 for 27 yards, not 127, 27 yards and an interception. Michael Vick didn't do much better. He was 8 of 19. At one point, he was 1 of 10 throwing, and he completed for 47 yards. The Jets' offense is just as bad as ever. They have no help from the running game, no Eric Decker on Sunday, so the big free agent signing was not in there to help. Chris Johnson was the other big free agent signing. He's barely getting more carries than Bilal Powell. It's just gotten worse in New York. It's unbelievable. So my statement, Smith should remain on the bench against Denver in week six. I'm actually going to punt that away. And not because I'm a believer that Geno Smith can turn his career around. It's because you really have no other choice. Are you really going to go with Michael Vick? You know, Vick is not the long-term solution. At this point, Geno Smith probably isn't either. But the only reason why Rex Ryan would go with Michael Vick is the same reason why Kyle Orton is playing in Buffalo. And I know the first thing you're going to say, well, Kyle Orton won a game in Buffalo. Sure, yes, he did. But isn't EJ Manuel still the solution there? I mean, is Buffalo already giving up on EJ Manuel and admitting that they now have to draft another quarterback? Doug Marone is starting Kyle Orton so that he can win games this year, perhaps compete for a division that, as of 3 days ago, everyone thought the Patriots weren't going to win, and hope that you can make the playoffs and save your job. Rex Ryan could do the same thing, start Michael Vick, try and win 8 or 9 games, and save his job again for another year. But ultimately, that does not help the franchise long term, unless you're already admitting that Geno Smith is not your franchise quarterback. Are you ready to make that decision already? I mean, I think there are a lot of fans that probably are, that are frustrated. Pretty much I'm ready to make that decision, but I didn't think he was the franchise quarterback when he was drafted a year and a half ago. But for somebody that believed in him, Rex Ryan and the Jets management, are you really going to just throw Smith to the curb and start Michael Vick, who's not a long-term solution, so that you can maybe have a winning record this year? Maybe. It's a huge maybe. Because even with Michael Vick, you're probably losing to Denver. and then you're staring at 1-5. You're going to be able to turn it around and finish 8-8 again, and that's not going to get you in the playoffs. That just barely will save your job. And that's been the problem with the Jets all along. The GM and the head coach not on the same page in where the franchise is going and what quarterback to start. One guy is trying to save his job, the other is trying to build for the future, and it seems like it alternates. You know, either commit to Rex Ryan long term so he can have a true rebuilding process and build this team without worrying about his job, or fire Rex Ryan and go with somebody else and draft a new quarterback. We got to take one more break. Here's one more song from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Then we'll come back and wrap up today's show. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. One more time, give me a tweet, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Or find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. Three articles I want you to check out this week. We didn't discuss Steelers, Jaguars. Michael Richter's Pittsburgh at Jacksonville, three things that we learned. Good piece. Joseph Swinford's article called Joe Montana and Tom Brady's Similar Seasons at Age 37. Now, that was an article written before Sunday Night Football, so keep that in mind, but a great comparison between Brady and Montana. And lastly, Chris Anderson's How Serious of a Playoff and Super Bowl Contender Are the Dallas Cowboys? Again, an article written before the games on Sunday. I would say that they are a serious playoff contender, at least. I don't want to call them yet a Super Bowl contender, but they're a team that will be there, I think, at the end of the year competing for a playoff spot. All of a sudden, the NFC East is pretty crowded with some good teams. Cowboys and Eagles just one loss. Giants have won three in a row, and we'll get Giants and Eagles on Sunday Night Football next week. A couple other reminders. Check out Cooper Allen's DraftKings articles. He's been doing a lot of great stuff in advertising for the $1 Million Contest, giving out advice. He's a great guy, has great advice, so I would recommend reading his stuff and perhaps using it in your $1 Million Contest if you sign up at DraftKings. And my other man, Tom Pollen, he will have an upset alert piece coming out at some point on Cold Hard Football Facts, another sister site of Football Nation. Tom is a great writer, and I suggest you reading his weekly piece on the biggest upset of the weekend. I am assuming it's going to be on the Bills and Lions, but I have not yet talked to Tom about that. And the last thing I'd like you to check out is my power rankings. They'll be out Tuesday morning as I rank all 32 teams and leave sarcastic comments. That's it for this week's show. Until next week, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.